Today, I'm going to try to accomplish two chapters. One's quite long. The reason why I want to do this is because in the book of Revelations, after the bowls come down, or I think it's before the bowls come down, it says the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. And so I want to try to accomplish chapters 30 and 31 today. And next week, we will hear the song of Moses, which is the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy. And it's a very fascinating chapter, which in commandment says you will tell these people what's going to happen at the end of their life, at the end of the time of cycle, and what will transpire. It's kind of a very fascinating chapter, but we won't go through that today. So we'll have Deuteronomy 30 and 31, please.
And when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse, which I have set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God has driven you, and return to the Lord your God, you and your children, and obey his voice in all that I command you today, with all your heart and with all your soul, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes and have compassion on you. And he will gather you again from all the peoples where the Lord your God has scattered you. If your outcasts are in the outermost parts of heaven, from there the Lord your God will gather you, and from there he will take you. And the Lord your God will bring you into the land that your fathers possessed, that you may possess it. And he will make you more prosperous and numerous than your fathers. And the Lord your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your offspring, so that you will love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. And the Lord your God will put all these curses on your foes and enemies who persecuted you. And you shall again obey the voice of the Lord and keep all his commandments that I command you today. The Lord your God will make you abundantly prosperous in all the work of your hand, in the fruit of your womb, and in the fruit of your cattle, and in the fruit of your ground. For the Lord will again take delight in prospering you, as he took delight in your fathers, when you obey the voice of the Lord your God to keep his commandments and his statutes that are written in the book of the law, when you turn to the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul. For this commandment that I command you today is not too hard for you, neither is it far off. It is not in heaven that you should say, who will ascend to heaven for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it? Neither is it beyond the sea, that you should say, who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us, that we may hear it and do it? But the word is very near you. It is in your mouth and in your heart, so that you can do it. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. If you obey the commandments of the Lord your God that I command you today, by loving the Lord your God, by walking in his ways, and by keeping his commandments and his statutes and his rules, then you shall live and multiply. And the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you are entering to take possession of. But if your heart turns away, and you will not hear, but are drawn away to worship other gods and serve them, I declare to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not live long in the land that you are going over the Jordan to enter and possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you today that I set before you life and death, blessing and curse. Therefore choose life, that you and your offspring may live, loving the Lord your God, obeying his voice, and holding fast to him. For he is your life and length of days, that you may dwell in the land the Lord your God swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Chapter 31. So Moses continued to speak these words to all Israel, and he said to them, I am 120 years old today. I am no longer able to go out and come in. The Lord has said to me, You shall not go over this Jordan. The Lord your God himself will go over before you. He will destroy these nations before you, so that you shall dispossess them. And Joshua will go over at your head, as the Lord has spoken. And the Lord will do to them as he did to Sihon and Og, the kings and the Amorites, and to their land, when he destroyed them. And the Lord will give them over to you, and you shall do to them according to the whole commandment that I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous. Do not fear or be in dread of them, for it is the Lord your God who goes with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. When Moses summoned Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel, Be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land that the Lord has sworn to their fathers to give them, and you shall put them in possession of it. It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Then Moses wrote this law and gave it to the priests, the sons of Levi, who carried the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and said to the elders of Israel. And Moses commanded them, At the end of every 7 years, at the set time, in the year of release, at the Feast of Booths, when all Israel comes to appear before the Lord your God at the place that he will choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Assemble the people, men, women, and little ones, and the sojourner within your towns, that they may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, and be careful to do all the words of this law, and that their children, who have not known it, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God, as long as you live in the land that you are going over the Jordan to possess. And the Lord said to Moses, Behold, the days approach when you must die. Call Joshua and present yourselves in the tent of meeting, that I may commission him. And Moses and Joshua went and presented themselves in the tent of meeting. The Lord appeared in the tent in a pillar of cloud, and the pillar of cloud stood over the entrance of the tent. The Lord said to Moses, Behold, you are about to lie down with your fathers. Then this people will rise and whore after foreign gods among them in the land that they are entering, and they will forsake me and break my covenant that I made with them. Then my anger will be kindled against them in that day, and I will forsake them and hide my face from them, and they will be devoured. And many evils and troubles will come down upon them, so that they will say in that day, Have not these evils come down upon us because of our God is not among us? And I will surely hide my face in that day because of all the evil that they have done, because they have turned to other gods. Now therefore write this song and teach it to the people of Israel. Put it in their mouths, that this song may be a witness for me against the people of Israel. For when I have brought them into the land flowing with milk and honey, which I swore to give to their fathers, and they have eaten and are full and grown fat, they will turn to other gods and serve them, and despise me and break my covenant. And when many evils and troubles have come upon them, this song shall confront them as a witness, for it will live unforgotten in the mouths of their offspring. For I know that they are inclined to do even today, before I have brought them into the land that I swore to give. So Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the people of Israel. And the Lord commissioned Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, Be strong and courageous, for you shall bring the people of Israel into the land that I swore to give them. I will be with you. When Moses had finished writing the words of this law in the book to the very end, Moses commanded the Levites who carried the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, Take this book of the law and put it by the side of the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord your God, that it may be there as a witness against you, for I know how rebellious and stubborn you are. Behold, Even today, while I am yet alive with you, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death? Assemble to me all the leaders of your tribes and your officers, that I might speak these words in their ears. Call heaven and earth to witness against them. For I know that after my death you shall surely act corruptly and turn aside from the way that I have commanded you. And in the days to come evil will befall you, because you will do what is evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him to anger through the work of your hands. Then Moses spoke the words of this song until they were finished in the ears of all the assembly of Israel.
Last week we talked about the other chapter. You know that one before this one? And he talked about having another covenant. You remember? And he says, now a new covenant we're going to have, you will keep the old one as well. Now a new agreement that God is making with the house of Israel, that they will enter in now to what's called the Promised Land or cross over Jordan. And he gave a lot more covenant cost. They got bigger in a sense. The people's responsibility began to be levied upon them more than at any other time. In the 40 years of the wilderness, there was just too much rebellion or resentment, too much hostility. And now that generation had pretty well had passed away. Now we got a new one coming in. And most of them about the age of 39, maybe 40 and under. And here, now God is going to make an agreement with them, another covenant with them, different than he did with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And is going to now follow through. And now here, Moses is talking about, now in the 31st chapter here, and he says, now it shall come to pass when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the cursing. Remember we talked last week about that there is a negativeness quote to the law, that if what happens, every covenant that God has ever made with anybody, including Abraham, including Adam and Eve, there is something, there's a blessing over here, and there's also part of his agreement now is over here. And the agreement is, I want you to walk this way. And the other one is, this is the other option you have. I don't want you to walk that way. But now, you must be held accountable. Sometimes we don't like to be held accountable because it's a whole lot easier to blame somebody else. Or to say, well, not me. No. When God does the dealing and does the calling and he does the choices, as I said before, there's not a human being that's ever been created that God did not create the mind for him to understand God. Plain as day. God didn't make a mistake and forget to create a brain that would not receive his words. No, he didn't make a mistake at all. He's the one that created the word, the one that created the language. So now we're at this particular point where we have the cursings and the blessings. Now, it says that it will come to pass. It's really an unusual old Hebrew word, but it comes from the word, it will come to pass, or it may come to pass. It will happen if this happens. It will come to pass for good. You'll have the blessings, or come to pass for the bad, or the cursings, if you walk contrary to my command. Now, in the book of here, in this the 30th chapter, there's a great deal of wonderful things are being said, right? But there's also a great deal of negative things being said. So you start figuring out, okay, is God really, a nice guy, or is he just playing tricks on us? Playing a game with us. This, I will bless you in this case, and I'll curse you in this case. Now, cursing is a word that we don't like to use, but basically Hebrew it means literally to speak ill of you. That's what it boils down to, right? When you curse somebody, you're speaking ill, right? You may not have the power to do damage with your speaking, but when Devarim opens up his mouth, what happens? His words do take action quickly, don't they? His words by themselves will do damage. Now, I could curse you and you'd all just laugh at me. But if God comes along and says, if I speak ill of you, you better pay close attention real quick, right? And so when we go through all these things, we don't like what's going on, but at the same time, He is the one that creates. Verse 2, with all your heart, with all your soul, and it means, okay, bikolavaka. With all your, or in all your heart. And what does that mean to us?
I think it means that you love Him with all of your capability.
Okay. Like
all of your physical capability, not mental.
Okay. Then the other one comes on, he says, and with something else. All your nefesh. What's nefesh? Or nefeshka. What is that?
Although it's supposed to be the concept of your breath, but it's supposed to be your soul, obviously, right? Well, to me, personally speaking, breath implies everything that is within you that comes out.
Within you that comes out.
So your words, your comments, your actions, they're all, it's all what makes you alive.
Yeah. So it's a play on words. And it's really easy to understand those terminologies, right? What comes out of your mouth and whatever you say. And you will do it with your very words, voice and volume that comes out, or even breathing, I guess you might say, back and forth too. All right. Now, he also said, also, here's where we got the one, if you return, this is where we get the Shiva. Shiva, I mean, we had this thing of, what's that song we sang? To Shiva. But this Shiva means to return. Now, what does it mean to return back? Turn around. Okay, that's a good one. Go ahead.
To return back to Him? Like, I would take that as we drifted too far away and He wants us to return back to Him.
Yeah. Where you have to know is, where do you return to? Okay, I want to turn around. Is that where I'm supposed to go? I don't know. Do you know where to go when He says to turn around?
One of the first things that always comes to mind as believers is the scripture where it says, we worry about all the things that we need and we have worry. Seek you first the kingdom of God and all these things will be added to you. So you get your nose in the book and you find out what He says to do and then you do it.
Any other examples of what here Moses is talking about? Right? That's not what this subject matter is about. Okay. There's two strong statements in this. I think it's this chapter or next chapter. Oh, yeah. So you're going to return to something. What are you supposed to return to? I'm going to jump ahead here just real quickly. Verse 10.
Well, Grandma, there are actually two things He does say that you should return to. He says, you will return to the land of your fathers and to Him. So, there's actually a difference on which one He's speaking of.
Well, in the 10th chapter, 10th verse here says what He wants to return to. With all your heart and with all your soul. Book of the... Yeah, the Torah. So you say, I've got to return. Return to what? Do I return to Jesus? Do I return to God? What turn to? Turn. Moses is talking about returning back to the Torah. Why? Why waste your time? Huh? Jeff?
That's the testimony of who God is. So we have no idea who God is, why we need to be in the land or anything else unless He told us.
Unless you go there. That's what it means to return to the Lord. You can take it on a religious basis. That's funky, Dory. But when you return to the Creator of heaven and earth, what do you return to? He's going to say, this is what my statutes, my judges, and my commandments are. But you say, I don't want them. Then you're not returning back, are you? You're not returning back to the Torah. You're not turning back to the teachings of God. As I said before, and I'll say it again, the Torah, all by itself, tells you the mind of God, the thoughts of God, the actions of God, the deeds of God. What else? I miss all the things. Yes.
So, thank you. When he says to return, he means return back to the Torah so you can learn him again?
Yes, always. Always. Okay. Everything is in the Torah is about him. It's about the Creator of heaven and earth. It's not about the stories of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's not the stories about a wonderful Noah ark. It's about returning to God, what he thinks, how he says, and how he acts. Remember, it is God who brought forth the actions of Noah. It's God who brought forth the actions of Abraham. It's God who brought forth the actions of all of them. Yes.
Imagine if Jessica sent me a text message and said, hey, come visit my house tonight. And I say, what's your address? And she says, oh, 123 Main Street, blah, blah, blah. So I go over, and instead I go to 456 Main Street. And she texts me later, Tammy, where are you? And I say, I'm at your house. She says, no, you're not. I'm at my house. And I say, well, I'm at 456 Main Street. That's close enough, isn't it?
Close enough, isn't it? That's an interesting way to put it, yes.
What's she going to say?
You got to go back. You know? I tell you, I'm a real, real strong believer in knowing what God, the Torah tells me what God, his actions, his thinking, his motives, his purpose, and his plan. It's all in the Torah. For not just Israel, but for all mankind, from the very beginning of Adam and Eve. It tells how his thinking is. He presented Adam and Eve with the very same thing he presents with you every single day of your life. What did he present to them? Life or knowledge? What do you take? No, life or knowledge. Remember the tree of knowledge. Keep that part in mind. It consists of two things. The tree of knowledge consists of two things. It consists of good and bad. Right? What was that? Yes.
There's two trees, right? One of good and evil, and then...
No, it doesn't say evil. Doesn't say it's evil.
I mean, it says good...
It's just a tree of knowledge.
Tree of knowledge, and then they...
Tree of life. Tree of knowledge, tree of life. Now, he put them there. That was a mistake on his part? Yes, Bill.
Well, he says choose life.
You're right. What did Adam and Eve do? They chose knowledge first. Now, the word of the Lord says something, that you must get to know him. You must have knowledge of him. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. What kind of knowledge do you need to know from the Lord? What is good and what is bad, right? And you listen and hearken unto his word, and he's going to say, and all you're getting, get something. What did he tell you, all you're getting, what are you supposed to get? Understanding. Understanding. So when he brings forth an issue, brings forth something like the Torah itself, he's telling you, I want you now, you got the knowledge of the Torah. Now, do you understand it? Put it into action and find out. When you put something into action, you're going to have, oh, now I understand. And then you will have life. You'll be blessed. But if you don't return back to, or desire to return back to, the Torah, and you say, well, I'm only going to stick with the writings of Paul and nobody else, you're going to be empty. Of course, Apostle Paul addresses pretty heavily this stuff in the Torah, but that's beside the point. In fact, he quotes the Torah probably more than anybody else. Anyway, but you understand what I'm saying? Now, I want to backtrack just a little bit here, down to verse 6. Could someone please give me a glass of water? My throat is getting really dry right now. Verse 6. Yahuwah, your Elohim. Now, wait a minute. Backtrack. One more verse. Verse 5. Then Yahuwah will bring you to the land which your fathers possessed. Thank you. Now, how is he going to do that? What's his purpose? And Yahuwah will do something. Yahuwah Elohim will do something. What will he do? Verse 6. What's he going to do? Circumcise. Now, he's commanded the people to circumcise their own heart. Okay. Let's put aside here for a moment. How would you circumcise your own heart? What does that refer to? When you're supposed to do some cutting, and you do some cutting, what else takes place?
Hair.
What?
It's sore for a while after they cut it. I mean, whatever you're going to cut away, maybe you think it's going
to
hurt.
You're going to cut away something from yourself.
Right.
And you don't want it back.
Yeah, it might be something you want.
Now, what is it you throw away? What is it you cut away? Okay. So you're going to cut away that which is contrary to his word. I want to go out and I want to have a party tonight, be drunk and then eat it. I love it. So you say, well, no, I love it. Got to cut that out. Throw it away. Right? So I'm using a real, real simple thing. Okay? Real, real simple. Put your own imagination there. Now you say, okay, I'm doing what God wants me to do. Yeah, you're doing so far what God wants you to do. Let me ask you some questions. Don't answer out loud, please. Before you came to understand anything about the Bible as an adult, you probably thought you were a pretty good person. You probably thought you were respectful and honorable. And you weren't even a troublemaker. You probably were a nice person growing up. And you got a good job and made good income. Got a good family. And then all of a sudden, God comes along and he says, I want to show you something. See, the knowledge of what is good and what is bad. What do you cut away? That which is bad, right? And you hang on to the knowledge, the part, excuse me, that is good, right? It's logical, right? Pure piece of cake. However, sometimes that bad stuff, you don't know is bad. Until God comes in and tells you what he says bad is. Now remember, it's not the tree of knowledge of good and evil. It's a real bad translation of it. It's the tree of knowledge of good and bad. You have knowledge of what's bad, you have knowledge of what's good. What does it mean to have knowledge of what's bad? What does it mean we have knowledge of what's good? Whatever. Let me ask you a question. I'm thinking out loud here, and please forgive me if I'm losing people. If I know that it's good not to break my neighbor's window, I also have the knowledge it's bad to break my neighbor's window. Right? That's all it boils down to is making a choice. I'm not going to break my neighbor's window. And I'm not even going to hate his guts. And it's a little hard turning the cheek, right? When you like to throw a rock at him instead. Anyway, go ahead.
So, if you cut out what is bad, what keeps you knowing that what you think you know is good? What keeps you knowing that that is actually good and not bad?
Okay, stop and think for a minute. We're taking something physical here. I'm taking something real physical here, a window.
Yeah.
Okay, now when you get through that, you figure out, okay, I'm not going to break anybody's window. Good, you got rid of it, all right? Your thought's gone. You get rid of it. Now God's going to go a little deeper. That's his job. Yes, Daniel.
You note the tree of knowledge, the tree of knowledge of good and bad. Now, it doesn't say that God wanted you to eat a tree of knowledge of only good, nor does he want you to eat a tree of knowledge that's only bad. What Adam and Eve did, they ate of that tree, which allowed them to understand the reason why something is good and the reason why something is bad, and they can choose bad. God did not intend for us to know the reasons necessarily why it's good or bad. You just do what is good alone.
You're right.
If you only know what is good, period, to know why it is good is irrelevant. So to know, so to understand what Zachary points out, you cannot know good unless you know what the opposite is. That's not technically the case. You can't know the reason why something is good unless you know what the opposite is. But you can know what something is good.
Let me ask you a question. When the serpent tested Eve, did she have knowledge of something? Yeah, she did. She knew God said, don't eat, don't touch. Period. She knew that. That's knowledge given to her. Right?
In our culture, we think we have to have a reason. But when I first started looking at the Hebrew approach to things, I learned that the last day of all the high days, the days after the Feast of Sukkot or Tabernacles, is called Shemini Atzeret. And I asked a Jew, what does it mean? And they said, well, we don't know. And I said, well, then you keep it and you don't know why you keep it? And he said, yeah. And I laughed. And then he said, God said, do it. So we do it.
Yeah.
And then I felt humbled by my own laughter that to me it is foolishness to keep something just because God said to do it because I'm an American, I have to have a good reason. And yet I thought, you know, I would like for my teenagers to have not done this and to have done that. Why? Because Mom and Dad said to. Sounds good to me on this end of it.
Now in this verse, it says God is going to do the circumcision. Why? Why? He tells you. He tells you why, right here, yes.
Could it be similar to the reason why he says when you have a field that's full of weeds and wheats, you don't go in and try to weed it yourself because you most likely will pull up good wheat in the process. If you try to cut things out of yourself, you may end up cutting out things that are good, replacing bad things with more bad things, etc. Yeah. But, you know, it's kind of interesting back to the point of following good instructions because they're good, not necessarily needing to know the bad things. It reminds me of, like, product manuals, you know. For example, a typical thing related to a computer, you know, they'll often have a little warning in there. If you skip these steps, you could destroy your hard drive. Well, why do you need that in there? If you were to just trust the guy saying, look, you need to follow these steps, you should not need the warning in there. Unless somebody just wants to be lazy and think they know what they're doing and skip the steps and then, kablooey, there it goes.
Okay, I want to briefly put together, I want to get the next chapter real quickly. But when God started circumcising people's heart, when do you think it started? By a death. The death of one very important person. And when that death took place, then your heart begins to change. You recognize God is means business. So serious a business that he's going to do this in order that you will learn to love him and you will learn to do it with all your might and with all your soul, with your breath. Because I tell you, how many of you are here today because of the Messiah's death? Yeah, you're not here because Mom, well, maybe some of you are here because Mom and Daddy can put you here. But you understand what I'm saying. And so it's kind of interesting to pay attention that the circumcision really doesn't take place by he's going to cut away that which is not his will. And when we see it happening to our innermost part, Then we see a prophecy here in the book of Deuteronomy. You remember a lot of things that God told Moses the second time he went up that mountain. But you remember one of the requests that he had? I don't know who you are. I don't know what you think. I don't know anything about you. All I know is you're strong and you're mighty and you're powerful. What is this all about? And so he says, okay, come up the mountain again. And by the way, you cut out the stones this time. And so Moses had to cut the stones out, and or had somebody cut them out for him. And up the hill. And when he came back down, what happened? What happened? The people were terrified. What did they see? The glory. They're very certain. When you go back one of these days, just read that section of the time he went up the second time. And those are just fantastic words. They were the best words that God ever told Moses everything about him. And that includes all the way to this point. Moses got to do what the story was all about. All right? So, let's move on. Chapter 31. Now Moses says, I cannot go in and I cannot go out. It's too much for me. 120 years, you know, pretty old. Anyway. And then he said, verse 3 of 31, Yahuwah Elohim himself will cross before you. Really? It's like, Moses, I want you to go down to Egypt. I'll be there before you. Why are you sending me for now? No. He's with them as he crosses over. It's not like he's way ahead of them. He's right there with them when they cross over. You understand what I'm saying? It's not like he's way in advance beyond there. He's right with them. And he uses an interesting man's name. Remember, his name was changed. And his name was changed to what? Yehoshua. Now, literally, it comes from the word. Literally means Yahweh is salvation. Now, what does salvation mean? It means one who liberated, one who liberates, one who delivers something or from someone or from something. So he says, now Moses is not going to go there, but Elohim himself will cross over before you, or actually with you, and the man who's going to lead you in there is Yahweh is salvation. Yahweh is the deliverer. Yahweh is one that liberates. It was not a name that kind of popped out of Moses' head. It was a name that Moses knew he had to give this man by God. And once he talked, you know, he's first talking to the whole crowd. Okay, verse 5. Verse 6, rather. Be strong and of good courage. He's telling the whole congregation, or the men, the leadership. And he said, now, he will not leave you nor forsake you. Now, later on in this chapter, he says, I'm going to forsake you. Oh. Is he contradicting himself? It sounds like it, doesn't it? I will never leave you or forsake you. And later on he says, I will forsake you. What? In the very same book? What's the issue here? Be strong and good courage. Don't be afraid. I am with you. I will not forsake you. If you are strong and of good courage and no fear. What are the main things in the book of Revelation that tells us that one of the first ones listed will not be there. The ones that are cowards. Very first thing. That means if you are a coward, God is not going to be with you. That's the simplicity of this one. Now, as we go on farther in the chapter, now, when he says, when you have been established, and you go after other Elohim, I am going to forsake you. What different issue, right? One, the combat of war. One's going and facing fear. One's going and doing what God wants to do, which is frightening, period, point blank. The other one is when you're in there for a while now, you've been there for a few years, or 20, 30, 40, or even a lifetime, and now you begin to go after Elohim. Guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to leave. So two different issues. In your world and in my world, we have to ask ourselves some questions, right? When we are brave and strong and courageous and bold and no fear, it's because God is with us. Right? Makes sense. Piece of cake. However, we start going off and playing little games, worshiping another idol, going after another will, another, let's say I want to become a millionaire, and I do all the maneuverings I can to become a millionaire, I've got another Elohim. Right? And what is God going to do with me then? He's going to forsake me. Why? Doesn't he love me? Isn't his love unconventional? What's that word? Unconventional?
Unconditional.
Unconditional, right? That's not what it says. I'm going to leave you. Goodbye. What? God would never do... There's nothing in the Torah, nothing in the prophets, nothing in the writings, nothing in the New Testament that says. He's that. He's going to love you under any and all circumstances. That's a theological preaching and not a biblical preaching. Right? It's real simple to understand because it says here, I'm going to leave you. Of course, he tells Joshua, you want to be strong and so on and so forth. They keep going on that one. And verse 12, now he says, gather the people together, men and women and children, and little ones, and the stranger who is with you within your gates, that they may hear and that they may learn to fear Yahuwah, your Elohim, and carefully observe all the Devarim HaTorah. Devarim HaTorah. Plurality, main words of the Torah. Simple, right? Return what? Gather together and tell them. Verse 10, we have never done this. I'm trying to figure out how many times we've had a Feast Tabernacles and we've never done this. I think it'd be cool. I might just consider how I could do that this year, although it's not the seventh year, but since it's been so delayed, maybe I can make up for it. But it says, at the end of the 7 years, the seven-year cycle, at the appointed time of your release at the Feast of Tabernacles. What is the release? When does Jubilee? No, seventh year. I'm sorry, what? A little louder. Sabbatical year, but the year of release at what time of year? And the third season. The Day of Atonement is the year or time of release.
It's declared Elul 29, which is the day before trumpets.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it? I've got to think how I can do that. Well, I don't know how I'm going to do that. It's a lot of things to read here. Anyway, I'll have to figure out what he was really getting down to. But the words of the Torah. And he says... And it says, let's see, verse 17, now is where you forsake me. And he said, now verse 17, and then my anger will arouse against them in that day when they worship another Elohim, verse 16, and I will forsake them, and I will hide my face from them. Now when he hides his face, is he playing the hide and seek? Is he playing hide and seek in the dark? Now, God is not Hoshech. God is light. Right? So when he hides his face, you get no light. Simple, right? There's no light. You're in darkness. So it's not very good. He says, and you'll have all those stresses and all those troubles. And it'll come a time when you will come back. That is, I will bring you back. But not because he had not turned off the light. Verse 19. Now therefore, write down this song. The next chapter is the song. Very fascinating piece of literature. For yourself and teach the children of Israel, put them in their mouths that this song will be a witness for me. For the children of Israel? What do you read? This will be a song that will be a witness for me against you. Right? Is that heavy or is that light? So when God speaks and says it's against you, remember there's the law that holds both the blessings and the cursings. Remember? The previous chapter, chapter 29, we talked about this covenant. And within this covenant is going to be blessings and cursings. Now, verse 16. Well, it says there, verse 21, and he says, and it shall come, and it shall be that when many bad things, trouble and troubles have come to them, that this song will testify against them as a witness. A song. A song? Song? Singing? Someone's going to sing? It really means Hebrew singing. Is singing, your song's going to be against me? Have you ever heard a song that's really against somebody? Yeah. Yeah, you have. Okay, guess what? God has a song. He taught Moses what the song was, and Moses wrote it down. And here it is. Well, not here today, but next week we'll talk about the song of Moses that comes to a real serious end. And it's a very serious song. I'm going to look very heavily in Hebrew on it because some of the translations in English are downright lousy. So it's going to be one of those things I'm going to have to do some real heavy research on and make sure I get the words exactly what it's talking about. And that, I know some of you guys have your Bible that have italicized words all over the place in that thing. And it's going to get a little bit confusing after a while. Yes, Dave, Jeff.
Well, when you think about the song, it harkens back to something the Messiah said, you know, we played the flute for you, but you did not dance. You sang a dirge.
You don't dance this one, right?
You did not mourn. So yeah. In the Song of Moses, there are things to be joyous about, and there are things to mourn about. But do you even notice?
Yeah.
Do you even care?
Yeah. Now that's what it boils down to, you know? And remember, this is really, says the Song of Moses, the one that Moses wrote down. He didn't come up with the words. God says, I am going to tell you the words to the song. And I'm going to tell you the tune. You got a guitar? I'm being funny right now. Silly, ridiculous. Anyway. In verse 26. Take this book of the Torah and put it beside or inside of the ark of the covenant of Yahuwah, your Elohim, that it may be there as a witness against you. Oh, this song, is it part of the ark? Wait a minute, ark, the first thing it had was what? Just stones? And later there was just, you know, rod, and there was a manna. And as time went by, all was left in there was the what? Just the stones. The song even was not there anymore. But it's written down. You can't get away with it. I can't get away with it. No one can get away with it. And Moses comes down and he says, "For I know you are a stiff-necked people," verse 27. "Today, while I am yet while I with you, you have been rebellious against Yahuwah. Then how much more after my death?" For 40 years he has been with him. Yes, Jeff.
Well, that passage there when it talks about these the book of the law beside the ark.
Yeah.
That's commonly used to say that this is unimportant. It's less important than what's in the ark, so thus it can be disregarded.
Silly. It can be disregarded. But you remember when I told you what God said the ark really, I mean the quote Ten Commandments really are called? They're called a what? They're called a testimony, right? And in Hebrew, what does that word mean in Hebrew? It's a witness against you. It's a piece of evidence. The Ten Commandments are there. If you got them on your hands, look at them. They're witnesses. They're telling you, guilty as charged. Plain as day. How did he get out of that? Well, we know that Messiah came and took away Jeff, help me out. It was the... He took away the writings on the wall or the ordinance against us.
Yes, it was the
judgment.
The curse that was against us.
Yeah. Took away the judgment that was against us.
So that's what the meaning of being under law and under grace is. We don't want to be under law because that means we die.
No. That's a very funny thing on verse 26. I think it's kind of interesting. 28. "Gather me all the elders of your tribe and all your officers. I want to speak with them." And so they gathered them all together. "And in their ears and call..." It's an interesting statement. "Call heaven and earth to witness against you." How many witnesses now are against them? Huh? We have the Ten Commandments. We have the song. And we have heaven. And we have earth. What else do we have against them? Daniel. That's a big mountain, right? The Torah winds up being against them. All right? Ooh, I thought the Torah was something that was going to give me life. No. That's not what's going to give you life. Hearing the Word and living the Word and doing the Word, that's what's going to happen to you. Remember, what did Apostle Paul say about the Torah? It was weak in that it could not save your life. It was weak in that it could not deliver you from death. It was weak because it could not carry out the final judgment. Jeff.
Well, I mean, when the Messiah said, you know, "You search the scriptures, thinking that in them you'll find life. But these are what testify of me."
Yes.
That's where the life is.
That's where life is at. I've got to write a book one of these days. One of them is about life. And I understand it completely, both in Hebrew and in Greek. Anyway, "Gather me together to testify heaven and earth." How could earth testify against you? I'm sorry, what? Way we're treating it? Okay. How does heaven testify against you? You're not up there mistreating it, are you?
Yeah.
How you mistreating it? You up there done anything? You gone up there done some damage?
Man is, yeah,
including
it.
Tammy.
When God talked to Adam and Eve after they sinned in the garden, he tells them that all of creation is cursed because of you. That includes the sun, moon, stars. All of it is cursed because of you. That's pretty strong.
Okay, when God... Go ahead.
The curse that action brought upon the earth is death. And there's death in the birds, and there's death in the animals, and there's death in humans. There's death everywhere on this earth because of that one action.
That's right. But let's reverse for just a minute. What happened before that happened? The earth, quote, gave forth life, not death. Gave forth life in the plants, gave forth life in the water, gave forth life in the air, and gave forth life from its dirt. I'm putting it in a paraphrasing thing, you understand what I'm saying? So in a sense, the earth does have its grounds, and the earth says, I want it back. And the earth now is demanding it back. If I can use that for that, it's not a living thing, in a sense like God, but it's telling you, there's a piece of evidence to go against you real quickly. Now, heaven can testify against you because someone's on the throne. And he knows all things because he created everything. In the beginning, Bereshit, Bara, Et, Elohim, Bereshit, 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 Bara, Elohim, Et, Hashamayim, Ha'eris. Created both heaven and earth. So God will use those two things that he has created to be a testimony against the people. Then Moses, verse 30, spoke in the hearing of all the assemblies, the one that he called up. Who did he call before him? Remember what it said here now? Gather together to me the elders of your tribes and your officers, that I may speak these words, and they may hear the words in their hearing, and call heaven and earth to witness against them. Now he says, now I'm going to sing a song. Verse 30. And Moses spoke in the hearing of all the assembly and the children and the Israel, the leaders that he just talked about earlier, the words of this song until they were ended. Any comments?
I have to disagree with something you said earlier. Uh-oh. You mentioned that God doesn't have unconditional love. I would disagree with that because, to me, unconditional love means that when you see somebody doing something toxic and stupid, you don't enable it. You don't give them money to go buy more alcohol if they're an alcoholic or anything like that. So when God says that if you go after these other gods and you do the worship, or you try to worship me the way they worship their gods, which is horrible and disgusting, I'm not going to have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't enable us. He's not. We use these words like codependent or enabling. That's not God's way. That's mankind's misguided way of loving people, but that's not how God loves people. He loves them with honesty and truth. And if you're walking in honesty and truth, he'll walk alongside you in honesty and truth. But if you want to go about lying and deceiving and doing horrible things, he's not going to walk alongside that because he's not going to encourage that in you or anyone else.
All right.
And that I agree, Tammy, but in our world, loving unconditionally has a different meaning than what God does. It means I will be nice to you no matter what. And that doesn't fly.
In the book of Revelations, keep in mind, next week we're going to go through the Song of Moses. And here it says here, in the 15th chapter, the middle of verse 3. I'll actually start in verse 3. And they sang a song of Moses, the servant of God, and the song of the Lamb. Listen carefully to the words. Both Moses' song is here, and the Messiah's song is here. 15th chapter. And this is just prior to God's wrath upon the earth. Hear what they are saying. Great and marvelous your works, Lord God Almighty. Just and true your ways, which we will find in chapter 32 in the book of Deuteronomy. O King of the nations, who shall not fear you, O Lord, and glorify your name? For you alone are holy. Now, the Song of the Lamb. For all the nations shall come and worship before you, for your judgments have been manifested. How was his judgments manifested? How was his judgments manifested? The death of his son. Is that hard to picture? The death of his son, his judgments against us, and we just got to read in here chapter 31 and 30, those will be what? Manifested. Made clear, made plain. How are you going to have life? How is he going to circumcise your heart? How is it going to change your thinking? By the death of his son. Now, the judgments have been satisfied. The penalty is finished. Do you understand what I'm saying here in the song? I find it very, very fascinating. The first part, boy, when we read the next chapter of Deuteronomy, it's not good news. It's nothing but judgment, judgment. Witness against you, witness against you, witness against you, witness against you, witness against you. Whew, pretty heavy stuff. He says, just and true are your ways. Yes.
Well, does that not explain then why in Revelations he says the Song of Moses, which is the witness against you, and the Song of the Lamb, which is the redemption?
Redemption, right.
They're not both on the same page. They're both beginning and ending.
That's how he's going to put life within us. That's how we can live forever. Because of his form of judgment will be satisfied. Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting what Ellie was saying there. Because really what you end up having, the Song of Moses and the Song of the Lamb, is the witness against you and the witness for you.